Josh Larson here with the Think Christian podcast. Thanks for joining us for another episode exploring how there's no such thing as secular, even in popular culture. Maybe one of the most blatant examples of that claim are those classic holiday TV specials from the 1960s that have stuck around for decades. Inspired by Christmas, some of them try to distance themselves from the religious root of the holiday, but the good news keeps sneaking in anyway. Joe George is going to join me in a bit to talk about one of the more faithful of those specials, A Charlie Brown Christmas. But first, let's bring in Abby Olchesi to discuss something slightly more slippery, how the Grinch stole Christmas. Off to Whoville we go. Abby, first off, let's make sure we're on the same page here. We're going to talk about 1966's How the Grinch Stole Christmas, right? We're not dealing with that 2000 Jim Carrey feature film abomination.
Oh, no. Oh, yes,
did you,
yes.
Did
yeah,
you forget
no,
that exists?
I'm kidding.
Oh, good.
Yes.
That was close.
Yeah.
I didn't actually see, I guess there's a 2018 animated feature adaptation as well, which I completely missed. So I can't speak to that. Did you ever catch up with that one?
I never did. I think I was just so over the Carrie version from 2000 that I didn't even pay attention to that one when it happened. Plus, it opened like right around November 1st or Halloween, and like any crossover in that area is just like automatically nixed in my book. So,
okay, I understand. I mean, the 1966 special, that's all I've ever needed. I watch it each year. This year it capped off for us. We call it Christmas Tree Day, the day after Thanksgiving in our house. We go out, get the tree, decorate, and then usually at the end of the night, try to watch at least one of these specials. And this year it was How the Grinch Stole Christmas. Is it an annual tradition for you or just one you generally appreciate?
It's become one that I generally appreciate. For a while, it was a yearly thing. Growing up, it was my grandfather's favorite Christmas special. That was the special of choice in his house.
Cool.
Yeah, so that was one that I grew up watching and kind of enjoying. I remember he had a stuffed Grinch and a stuffed Max the dog that he would bring out every Christmas
oh,
day
wow.
to open presents with, yeah.
That's fantastic. So besides the passing down from generation to generation, do you have any other ideas as to why you think this is one of those that has lasted?
I think some of it is the whimsy of it. It's really colorful and has that kind of classic Dr. Seuss rhyme to it. Also, the talent involved, apart from it being a Dr. Seuss adaptation, I think kind of makes it timeless. You've got Boris Karloff doing the narration and the Grinch voice. You've got Chuck Jones doing really excellent animation that I think is super creative and funny, but also doesn't stray very far from its loyalty to the Dr. Seuss source mm-hmm. material. So it's really, I think, a really good balance of classic talent and sort of a timeless theme that really resonates with people.
Yeah, for me, part of it too is the music. I mean, I adore mm-hmm. the original Dr. Seuss book, but I have to say it's almost improved by the addition of the Grinch songs, and the lyrics were written by Theodore Geisel, Dr. Seuss. So, and another talent in the mix here, they were sung by Thurl Ravenscroft. Is that a welcome Christmas earworm for you, Abby, or is that one you get sick of, the Grinch
oh,
song?
No, I love that one. I like it when your Christmas music gets a little bit on the darker and sardonic side, and I think this one definitely hits that button for me.
For sure. I mean, the Grinch himself is such a great villain, as you mentioned, voiced by Karloff in the special. And it struck me this time watching it that if we're going to see this special in the light of Christmas, and I mean the birth of Christ, the incarnation of grace in this world, then we maybe have to see ourselves as the Grinch. I know our instinct is probably to think of ourselves as the Whos, right? Those who do not let the commercialization of Christmas ruin our spirit. And it's easier to identify with them. But really, it's the Grinch and seeing us as the Grinch that makes this a Christmas story. You can think about our sins separating us from the community of Christ. I love the detail, his heart being two sizes too small, and what a wonderful symbol of original sin that is in a lot of ways. And just this idea that despite that sin, God offers inclusion anyway to us, free of charge. I think about the Grinch giving back those gifts, even though he doesn't have to. And it's interesting that those gifts are sort of his response to seeing the goodness of the Whos. In spite of his efforts to ruin anything, they still express that goodness and that joy, and his response is to return those gifts. And then, of course, where it ends up, that he's not only welcomed into the fold, but at the head of the table. So Christ came to save the Whos, but also the greatest sinner, the Grinch. That's kind of what stood out to me on this annual visit, Abby. How is this a gospel-tinged holiday special for you?
I think that's a really good interpretation of it. And actually, I kind of had to go back and think a little harder about this because I often think of the Grinch as being a fairly secularized version of Christmas, since like all of the themes of joy and togetherness are there without really addressing like the incarnation of Christ. But I think as Christian thinking culture involved people, we are sort of called to look for those themes in there as well. And actually, I found a really interesting essay by Alan Noble on Christ and pop culture, where he talked a little bit about sort of themes that he saw of the nativity and of Jesus in The Grinch. And one of them, I thought, was that he said it was the story of how a self-imposed outsider came to love a community through a holiday tradition, and that as Christians, we are called to gather and to be inclusive and to love and also to be redeemed. So it kind of works on both sides of that coin, which was something I really appreciated, actually. I'd forgotten kind of the weight of that line, "He hadn't stopped Christmas from coming, it came," that like it's still there, like it's still going to happen, not even just on a calendar basis, but the themes of love and forgiveness and spending time together for Christians, brought about by the gospel and brought about by the institution of church and of holidays and liturgy, that it still comes. It's still there no matter what happens.
Yeah, that's really beautiful. And I'll have to catch up with the Alan Noble essay. I didn't see that the first time. That was at Christ and Pop Culture, you mentioned?
Yes.
Okay, we'll link to that in the show notes because that sounds great. I think, too, you know, some of those details in the animation, going back to what you said about this being long-lasting and the Chuck Jones combination of the manic stuff we're used to from his work with Dr. Seuss's particular brand of mania, really make this a remarkable holiday special to me. Do you have any sort of like little animated favorite moments from this that every time you watch it, it kind of jumps out at you, you get a little chuckle at, Abby?
I always feel really sorry for Max the dog.
Yes.
I think he's got those huge eyes and those long eyelashes that Chuck Jones likes to give his more vulnerable characters. And he goes through so much. I think the part toward the beginning of the song where the Grinch is sewing his Santa outfit and the dog's tail gets caught in the sewing machine and kind of goes around the needle. And the dog looks so apologetic and sweet and sad. And my heart goes out to him every time.
Yes, that's true. It's a great detail. For me, it always strikes me how barren things get when the Grinch does begin sneaking in and stealing the decorations, stealing the gifts, and just how he is not content to leave one single thing. That going back to pluck the crumb away from the mouse, just to emphasize the emptiness. And of course, it's a great juxtaposition with the fullness that we eventually are brought back to with those final scenes when the Grinch does join the Whos. So yeah, it's a classic. It's wonderful. I never get tired of it. And there is plenty of time before Christmas yet to watch it one more time if you want, Abby. So thanks so much for joining us for this episode.
Absolutely. Thanks.
You're a mean one, Mr. Grinch. You really are a heel. You're as cuddly as a cactus. You're as charming as an eel, Mr. Grinch. You're a bad banana with a greasy black peel.
Ah, yes. The wonderful secular liturgy of popular culture around the holidays. I wonder how long things like these seasonal TV specials will stay relevant now that people can watch them whenever they want. When I was a kid, we had to wait until... well, you get the point. And lest we not forget how important music was in these things, why, what would any halfway decent liturgy be without tunes? Hello, John J. Thompson, your favorite musical elf here, in-house DJ for the Think Christian podcast and curator of customized playlists for each and every episode of the show. And this episode's batch should ease you right into the Advent spirit. And lest you forget, Advent is not merely a countdown to Christmas, you know. That may be what it has become, but the church fathers and the folks who arrange the liturgical calendar and the readings in the lectionary, designed Advent to be a time to consider the darkness and our need for light, our lostness and need for a guide, our death and need for resurrection. We prepare ourselves for the second coming of Christ, and indeed watch for him to come daily into our lives, even as we prepare to mark the commemoration of the time he came to earth as a baby a couple thousand years ago. So, if you suspect this is going to be some hackneyed Christmas music list, think again. We've got songs about the coming winter, the chaos of commerce, the fear of death, the unlikeliness of faith, with a few gems from those classic TV liturgies thrown in too. Just search for the Think Christian playlist on Spotify and hit play. If you follow the latest episode playlist, the newest one will always be there in your browser, but you can also find each episode's batch listed separately under the Think Christian profile. And of course, we combine all the playlists into one massive archive, so you can follow that as well. And if you think of any great Advent in the modern day songs I should have included, feel free to tweet at me at John J. Thompson, and I'll make my list and check it twice. Until next time, remember, seek and ye shall find. Happy hunting.
Hi, Think Christian listeners. I'm Wade Beard.
And I'm Kevin McClenathan.
And we just wanted to drop in and let you know about our film and TV podcast, Seeing and Believing.
Every week, we take two movies or television shows, mostly current releases, but sometimes classics. We delve into their narrative and technical aspects and explore their spiritual and religious themes.
To hear us search for the sacred on screen, just hop on over to iTunes and look for Seeing and Believing.
Josh Larson back with the TC Podcast. I'm glad to have Joe George on the show. Joe, it's memory work time. Can you tell me what passage is quoted at length in A Charlie Brown Christmas, and can you recite it for me?
I believe it is Luke 2, 8 through 14, the King James Version, and I can recite it because I have it pulled up on my iPad right here.
Okay. You shouldn't have said that. You should have just, you know, really impressed us with your ability. Yeah, you're spot on there. This is what Linus recites at the climax of the 1965 TV special, and I love what prompts it. It's Charlie Brown's exasperated question, isn't there anyone that knows what Christmas is all about? And then, funnily enough, we get the first Christmas story. What's your history with this special, Joe? Is this something that's a part of your regular Advent season, or is it something you just return to here and there? Do you remember when you first saw the show? Why does this one still resonate with you?
Oh, my goodness. I watch it every year, and I have since I was a child. I mean, it's one of those things where I can't even remember the first time I saw it because my dad loved the Peanuts growing up, and therefore I did too. But, you know, it was one of those things that I rediscovered as an adult about, I must have been like 20, 21 or so. And the first time I got hit with really bad depression around Christmas, and it was one of those things where, like, I could not leave the couch. I had to call friends and say, can somebody come be with me? And I sat down and Charlie Brown Christmas happened to be on TV. And it's clicked then, that whole, how can you be depressed about Christmas? You're getting depressed because you're depressed about Christmas. You know, that's still refreshing. I mean, that's a common feeling I think that a lot of us have. And yet, how often do you see it portrayed like this?
So do you remember when you came upon it, did you recall from previous viewings that it had that element to it, or did it catch you by surprise?
It totally caught me by surprise. You know, I've gone back since. I own many of those nice Fantagraphics collections of the Charles Schulz strips, you know, and I've gone back since and fallen in love with them. But, you know, there was that time kind of right around the end of the Peanuts strip, just shortly before Charles Schulz actually died, where kind of the major narrative of Peanuts was that they were fun and sweet little kids, and you kind of forget about, darkness isn't quite the right word, but melancholy maybe is a better word, the melancholy that's in the strips and in the special. So I had totally overlooked that aspect as a child and kind of rediscovered it as an adult.
Yeah, it surprises me every year. I now remember that it certainly begins that way and has that tone throughout, yet the intensity of it always takes me by surprise. And the cruelty of the other kids to Charlie Brown takes me by surprise. So yeah, it definitely stands apart from other holiday specials in that way and always has. It was written, of course, by Schulz, the special itself was, and it's fairly direct in its religious rooting. That's what he brings to it, you know, including that quotation from Linus, but you mentioned Darkness and Melancholy, and I think that's one of the other ways that A Charlie Brown Christmas captures what Christmas is all about beyond a scripture reading. A lot of it is in the animation itself for me, the darkness of some of those scenes and the stillness also. We associate darkness and stillness with Advent, of course, and I think about that night sky when Charlie Brown and Linus go out to pick out a Christmas tree and they find that sad little Christmas tree. There's a deep blue, it's almost a black sky behind them, and it's devoid of stars at that point. So that definitely brings to mind Advent to me. And I just think that tree itself is such a great symbol for the least of these and reminds me of the biblical call to care for those lonely and those lost, including those watching this special sometimes. Charlie Brown's classmates, they make fun of the little tree, and I love the distinction, though, the turn that it takes. After Linus preaches, notably, they follow Charlie Brown as he leaves the rehearsal hall and carries it home. And if you notice that sky again, there are some stars in it at this point. They start to appear, and eventually those kids are the ones who decorate the tree, who save it before they go on to sing Hark the Herald Angels Sing. So there's a ton of gospel stuff in here beyond Linus reading a Bible verse. Did anything else along those lines stand out for you, Joe?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I always love the voice work on these Peanut specials, and especially on this one, that they're so unprofessional. They feel like actual children reciting actual lines, and that works. That strangely cuts through the fakeness and sort of reminds us that these are children performing what they see in the world around them. You know, we get that kind of in the gag where Lucy talks about what she really wants. And, you know, she's like, I understand what it's like to get depressed around Christmas time. I always end up feeling bad. She's like, well, what do you really want? Real estate. Yeah. Which is, it's a good gag because she's repeating what adults have. Sally does the, you know, I only want what's coming to me. I only want what's mine. And so you get the aspect that Charlie Brown's looking at the way that the world is reflected on these children and is dissatisfied with it, which that's sort of the heart of Advent in a lot of ways, is to look at the world as it is, look at the earthly kingdoms, and to sort of embrace that dissatisfaction and the longing for the kingdom that Christ inaugurates.
Yeah, in a way, his depression, his melancholy is truer than what the other kids are focusing on or talking about. And the way you describe the voice work, it's almost like the performances you find in a Christmas pageant at church. I love that quality that it has also. So we haven't even brought up at this point the wonderful, wonderful music by the Vince Guaraldi Trio. This is perhaps my favorite Christmas album. It's mostly melancholy. It's also quiet. It's also still. It's very Advent. Did you have any thoughts on the music itself, Joe?
Well, you know, there's the great bit that Charlie Brown early on has the line, I know nobody likes me. Why do we need to have a holiday to emphasize it? So he's at the height of his self-loathing. And it cuts from that to the kids trying to catch snowflakes and throw snowballs. And the score is just tinkling behind it, you know? And it's kind of this reminder that as dark and melancholy as we can get during the season, that the joy is present. It's constantly present. And as still as it can be at times, the parts of the score that stand out to me are the more upbeat bits, you know, the dancing sequence and the jaunty music that we get when Snoopy's decorating his house and all of that. It's kind of the slower stuff like Christmas time that doesn't really stick with me as much.
Yeah, I like that it does hold that tension without it. For me, the distinction has always been the melancholy, but you're right. It does shift into joy from here and there and manages to capture the whole picture in its score, along with the story and the animation. Well, we should probably listen to a little bit of that here as we go out, Joe. Anything else about A Charlie Brown Christmas you want to make sure we touched on?
I want to leave with kind of the question that I always have, and I kind of talk about with my kids sometimes when we watch it, is does Linus's passage answer Charlie's question? You know, he says, does anybody know what Christmas is all about? And Linus then repeats the passage, and he just says, that's what Christmas is all about. And the special never really builds on that. That question still kind of lingers. And I love that about it, that it's our question for us to answer. And I think that's an Advent thing for us, is how do we make that real? The fact that Christ is born, that the kingdom of heaven is at hand, and we are its messengers even today. What does that mean for us in reality? And I love the way that the special doesn't really answer that, and that leaves it on us.
Yeah, if there's any answer, it's maybe in the action that follows that I mentioned, you know, the following of Charlie and Linus following them in the tree and redeeming that tree in the way that they do. But certainly it does not give us a speechy, conclusive ending. And I think it's all the better for it. All right, let's listen to a little of that music from the Vince Guaraldi Trio. Joe, thanks so much for jumping on the show and have a wonderful Christmas, all right?
Thanks, Josh. Merry Christmas.
Those of us steeped in the liturgy and music of Advent can easily add the words to the Vince Guaraldi Trio's instrumental jazz variation on What Child Is This, a moody piece that captures the mystery and miracle of Christmas. You can hear other selections from the Charlie Brown Christmas soundtrack on the Advent TV Spotify playlist that John J. Thompson put together for this episode. We'll drop a link to that playlist in the show notes at thinkchristian.net/podcast, or you can find it by searching for the Think Christian playlist on Spotify. Thanks to Abby Olchesi and Joe George for marking Advent with me with the help of some classic TV. You can follow them both on Twitter. Abby is at Abby Olchesi, ABBYOLCESE. And Joe is J.A. George II. That's J.A. George II. I'm Larson on Film, and you can follow us at Think Christian as well. We're going to take some time off for Christmas, but we do have big plans for the start of the new year. Our first episode of 2020 will be a theology of Star Wars. We're going to dig into Rise of Skywalker and also catch up with The Mandalorian. Then, after that, we'll have a special roundtable show that's going to talk about the pop culture artifacts that best captured the spiritual tenor of the 2010s. That's right, we'll sum up an entire decade in about a half hour or so. It should be fun. In the meantime, you can keep up with what we are doing over at the TC website, thinkchristian.net. I believe by the time this episode is out, we'll be almost done with our Best of 2019 series, listing our favorite music, TV, and movies of the past year. If you don't want to miss any of our articles, just sign up to receive our emails. You can do that at thinkchristian.net/subscribe. Thanks for joining us in 2019 to consider how our pop culture fandom resonates with our faith. We're so grateful to have had you listening, and we look forward to doing it again next year. The Think Christian Podcast is a production of Reframe Media, a family of programs designed to help you see your whole life reframed by God's gospel story. Visit reframemedia.com for more info. Our audio engineer and post-production supervisor is John Reeder. Thanks again for listening, and have a Merry Christmas, everyone.